Thank you for choosing to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. In a really amazing selection of other podcasts indicative of the recruitment market and the business market, for whatever reason you're listening now, we just want to say thank you for choosing us. We couldn't do this without our sponsor and our partners. We're going to talk about them a little bit later on in the show, but thank you to Pager, our sponsors, and our partners Inclusion Crowd and Needy. And without further ado, let's jump in to get to know this week's guest. I am so excited to welcome to our global community today somebody that I've been secretly stalking via TikTok and LinkedIn for a number of years. This is David Rowles, and he is the founder of DMR Consulting. He is a retained recruitment trainer and business development coach, and really quite big on TikTok. So during today's conversation, we debate the possibilities of retained versus contingent recruitment and who should be selling retained, who should be looking at subscription models, for example. It's a really interesting discussion. We also talk around TikTok, social media, and how you can really take on board all the advice that David has given us today in this next episode, and how you can make yourself stand out on TikTok to your target audience. And it's then easily applicable to other platforms such as LinkedIn. You're definitely in for a treat. David is definitely exactly as he comes across on his TikTok videos. He's high energy. He's really informative. He's really infectious, actually, and just a really, really lovely man. So I can't wait for you to get to know him. So without further ado, let's jump in. We are so proud at the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast to be sponsored by Pager. Pager helps recruiters to build personal brands, to identify new business opportunities, to attract those hard-to-find candidates, and to basically have better conversations. Now, you will have a large network that you want to build credibility with on LinkedIn, and sometimes posting content every day feels impossible. Now, that changes once you have Pager. Pager provides you with the ideas, the content, and the scheduling capability to produce daily content to build out your own personal brand in minutes. And for business development too. Pager identifies companies that are advertising jobs, have key hiring indicators such as funding rounds, mergers, acquisitions, or senior appointments, and then alerts you to this daily. Pager also enables you to write candidate-centric job adverts without bias in seconds. So once you advertise your job, Pager will then automatically create a branded post and publish it to LinkedIn without you even having to lift a finger. So when you want to actively source candidates, you can create complex Boolean strings in seconds. All you need to do is to provide the job title and location. Now, Pager is making thousands and thousands of recruiters smarter and faster. For more information, click on the link pager.co to book your demo, and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when inquiring. Now, back to the episode. This is Leisha Holmes, and I'm your host on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. And I am a little bit in awe today because my next guest is someone that I've been secretly stalking, although maybe not so secretly stalking, on LinkedIn and TikTok for some time. And I'm hoping to a lot of you, this will be a very familiar name and face if you're watching over on YouTube. This is David Rowles, and he's the founder of DMR Consulting. He's a retained recruitment trainer and business development coach. And more importantly, he's a TikToker. Welcome to you today, David. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on.
I can't believe this is the first time we've met. I mean, actually, what's really funny for you guys listening now is that we've actually been chatting away for over half an hour. And then I'm like, oh my God, we better press record. You are just somebody that I can see why you've been so successful. But there will be people, because we have a global audience, who don't know who you are. So give us an overview of your journey and why you're here today.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so I was in recruitment for like just over 6 years, I want to say. And I moved into like the coaching, consulting, content creation realm like just over a year ago. Basically, what happened was last year, I think it was September, I got to a sort of crossroads where I was like, I definitely want to go self-employed. I've always been like an entrepreneur. Like even when I was a kid, I used to do like car washing, and I used to run my own newspaper in primary school and that sort of thing. Like, you know, when you look back and you're like, why did I set up my business? And you're like, oh, actually, I've been doing it for years. I've always wanted to do it. I think some people would just, they need to be self-employed, right? So I was like, well, I definitely want to be self-employed. I definitely want to take that leap. What does that look like? And I had two options. I had the obvious route of setting up my own recruitment agency, doing the retainer stuff, which I, you know, bore people to death with on LinkedIn. And, or I could go down, you know, the coaching consulting route. And the reason I did that was basically I sort of decided that I wasn't happy with the reputation of the recruitment industry generally. And I thought, well, I could either lead from the front, lead by example by setting my own agency, but then my reach is going to be very small. It's only going to sort of impact clients I work with and the people I employ, right? I'm not going to have any impact at all. Whereas if I go into like content creation and consulting, you know, I can work with people around the world and I can actually make an impact in this great industry and help improve it. So yeah, basically what I've been doing over the last year or so is, in a nutshell, business development consulting. Like, I help recruitment agencies improve their business development strategy. And most people work with me because they want to transition from the typical contingent model to the retained model. So they basically get paid up front by their clients for their time. And as you know, I also do, like, I put out quite a lot of content on LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube, got my own podcast, all that kind of good stuff. So
you do. It's absolutely phenomenal. And I love what I just want to pick up on one little part of your story there. I totally agree with you that you can retrospectively look back at moments in your life where you're like, you were and you are an entrepreneur. And that's why this is a whole different show. But I think that within the education system, that's where teachers could help to spot and harness those skills, and as opposed to just putting everybody on the same conveyor belt. But that's just me waxing lyrical, because I think I was never the naughty girl ever. Actually, I was a little bit of a teacher's pet, but I was always contrary to the route that I just seemed to be on with everybody else. I knew I'd always end up being my own boss, because it wasn't like you couldn't tell me what to do, but I was just so conscientious myself for what I wanted to achieve that it was inevitable that I was always going to be self-employed. So I think that's really interesting. I don't think I've ever asked anyone that before. So I love that. So for those idiots in the room who don't know what the difference between retained and contingent is, let's just be really brutally honest. For you, and from what you've seen in the market and your own experiences, what are the comparisons, and then what are the advantages of one or t'other for those who are maybe treading both at the moment?
Yes, it's funny, because when I moved into coaching and consulting, I just sort of, I did it all of a sudden. And, you know, when you're a recruiter, you're only focused on the agency you work on and the market you work in. You're not speaking to other recruiters necessarily, are you? Unless you've got a few mates who work at other agencies. So I didn't really know what the landscape was like. I just sort of jumped into it and I just assumed everyone knew what retained was and how it worked and stuff. But what I sort of realized was, and you know, from sort of January onwards this year, is that the word like retained has so many different definitions for so many different people. Most people, especially those outside of recruitment, if you say retainer to them, they either think braces, like the American term for braces, and they're like, right. What are you on about? Or they've watched Suits and they're like, oh yeah, lawyers retainer, whatever that means. They still don't really understand, but they sort of understand that there's some money exchanged up front, or it's like a monthly fee or something, right? So, and for me, it was so different, because for me, it's more about improving your value proposition, productizing your service, and using that fee in a way that you can then massively improve the service you offer and the value you offer to your clients. And yes, obviously, you know, guaranteeing your commission, but I suppose to sort of break it down in a very simple term. So for me anyway, contingent recruitment is what most recruiters do, in that they'll take a requirement on, they'll work with a client, and they'll get paid their fee after they've done the job, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And I was a contingent recruiter for the first 4 years of my career.
Mm.
And retained is basically that you get paid usually part of the fee up front. How that looks is very different depending on the model you work, but you basically get part of the fee up front.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the rest once the job is completed. But one of the main selling points of it is basically to protect the recruiter's time. So if the client pulls a role mid-search, and you know, loads of recruiters will, this happens, probably happening right now, happened to me on a weekly basis. You work a role, you can work it for 2, 3, 4 weeks at a time, put all that work in, you can even have candidates in at final stage, get that email. Sorry, we've decided to put the role on hold. Recruiter doesn't get paid anything. Yeah. And we're one of the only industries, I think the only one I'm aware of that still does this in the old fashioned way is like creative agencies. Cause my, my cousin is like an art director. And he would say to me, I was chatting with him about this actually. And he was saying, yeah, it's the same in the creative world, but it's actually worse for them because they would, they do loads of design work and everything, pitch it, and then don't get the project.
So it's the same project. Concept, but... It is. You're absolutely, I've never really thought about a comparable, because if I think about architects, if I think about lawyers, if I think about finance people, you know, insurance, everything that you do, your time is honored and respected by the customer, whether or not you continue with that product or that process or that service or whatever it is. And I've always wondered, very retrospectively, what our industry would be like if right from day one in recruitment, the very first day in recruitment, in I think it was in the 1940s possibly, the whole premise was from a retained point of view and it never was a contingent model. Maybe it was a retained model. We should probably look into the history of recruitment, shouldn't I? But I think it actually beggars belief, really, that we do all this work and then at the very final stage, the candidate can change the mind, the client can change the mind, you know, there's a hidden candidate in the process somewhere, and you as a recruiter have done all that work. And then you kind of think to yourself, because I know that I love that you're all about improving our industry, because that's what I'm here to do as well, that no wonder a majority of recruiters couldn't give a shit and are just transactional, because they think, well, what's the point? There's no point me immersing myself and caring about it and finding the best candidates and headhunting for it and going through all the due diligence for the candidate if actually at the end I'm not going to get paid for it. It's actually no wonder, really.
Yeah, this is the thing. And you know, like for me, it was, I mean, I can tell you why it even came into my mind if you want, just to give you a bit of backstory.
Of course.
Yeah, basically what happened was, like, I was doing recruitment for, I think it was just before COVID. I remember that, right? So I'd moved around a few jobs and I switched markets. And whenever you switch market, you sort of got to start from scratch again. And you know, it's going to be a lot of work, you know, 12 hour days, working weekends, that sort of thing. But I moved into a dev market in London for the agency I was working with. And I basically just worked my ass off for a few months and went from a really bad place in terms of billings to a really good place very quickly. Brought on some new clients. I had one of my best ever months at the time. And I just remember sitting there having done, I think it was like 38 grand or something. And it was like across six placements, right? A lot of work, software engineering. But to do those six placements, I had to work like 12 roles.
Wow.
And in our agency as well, like, I mean, that was a 50% fill rate for, say, the month of the roles I was working. That was like really high. I think
I was just about to say about that was really good, wasn't it?
The most recruiters I speak to, and my sort of like average fill rate, I would have probably would say throughout my career, is probably about the standard 25-30%.
Yeah.
Some even lower, as you know. Some people work 10 roles and only fill one. But I just remember sitting there exhausted and I was just like, there must be a better way to do this, or at least a different way to do this. And I chatted to quite a few people about sort of like retainers and that sort of stuff over the last sort of the previous 6 months anyway. So it was on my mind, but everyone kept on telling me the same thing. It was just like, oh, retainers are only for exec search roles, like CEO level roles and that sort of stuff. And you know, you can't do it for normal roles, et cetera, et cetera. If you don't like if you can't deal with the 30% fill rate and knowing that 70% of your time is going to be wasted, maybe recruitment isn't for you. And I was like, well, it is for me, but I just feel like, could I not get my fill rate up to like 95%? Like, someone must be doing it.
Absolutely.
So that's where it all started, really. And I ended up sort of looking into it and, you know, with the help of, you know, a lot of colleagues and friends, lots of research, speaking to people on LinkedIn, et cetera, over the course of the next sort of like 12 to 18 months, I got to the point where I felt like I had a system in place that worked really well. And what I realized was that there's loads of different aspects of the search that were improved. Like, for example, so two very simple things that pop into my head. being able to implement SLAs, like service level agreements, timescales, for those who don't know about that. So we always used to try and do that. We'd be like, oh, you have to come back to us within 2 days of us sending a CV to you, you know? And it, I think our average response rate for a CV was like 3 to 7 days.
Right.
One time I sent this software engineer to a quite a well-known company, and they took, I think it was 10 working days to come back. And I was just like, this is mad. Can we not keep them accountable in some way? But as you know, like you can have these verbal agreements, but you know, we're a contingent recruiter. They can just drop us at any moment and just go work with another. And they're probably working with three other agencies anyway. So there was no real commitment either side. But when I worked one of my first retain roles, one of the things we did was we were like, we're going to put in a 48-hour SLA. So you have to come back to us within 48 hours maximum, or we have the right to keep the $5,000 or whatever it was, right?
Mm.
And the hiring managers started replying in half an hour.
Funny that, isn't it?
And it was funny. And yeah, it was really funny. And I remember speaking to the head of TA, because the role I was working on, that role, was, it had been live for like 3 months, and they'd really struggled, and we got it filled in like 9 days. Mm. And I said to the head of TA, I was like, head of IT or whatever is fantastic, by the way. He's one of the best people I've worked with. Response rates, interviews were booked in within half an hour, offer was out within half an hour.
Wow.
And he was like, well, actually what happened was, we've never done these SLA thing before, and as soon as we got everything going, I called him and I said, there's $5,000 on the line. Whenever David emails you or calls you, he's your priority, because if you miss it, the company loses $5,000.
It's like a penalty almost. It's a punitive system. I quite like that.
Yes, it worked really well. And then I started to realize, like, there was loads of little things like that I was like, oh yeah, I didn't realize that's why we were having this problem. And, you know, like things like that, it can make a huge difference. Like roles that take 6 weeks to get filled now take 10 days, which means your time to hire goes up enormously, which means you can earn the same amount of money in a quarter of the time, or you can bill more with the same time, you know. So
but that's just underpinning, isn't it, the whole premise of why retained is something that every single listener should be thinking about. It's about you valuing your time, and then your client understanding that your time is valuable. So that punitive $5,000 or whatever the amount might be, if they knew that that's actually what your time was worth, would they have still come back to you within half an hour? Probably not, if there's no actual money exchanged hands. But you know what? That is still worth, that time is still worth that amount to you, whether or not you've taken the money up front or not. And I think there's so much to be said for this kind of almost self-inflicted barrier that recruiters have about what their time is actually worth. We sell that, don't we? You know, why would you use a recruitment agency? Well, we're going to save you the time, because you don't haven't got time to go and find. Well, actually, what about our bloody time? So I think it's such a simple concept, but there's so many people that just don't value their own time, because they don't see themselves as anything other than, you know, we're just here to service you and send you this information. And it's not, it's the whole concept of partnership, relationship, and the value of the time that you spend looking for people and partnering your client.
Yeah, it's the whole thing of people falling into that subservient mentality, isn't it?
Like, I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, how many times do you see recruiters and hear about recruiters like just doing whatever their client says, and you know, people, they drop their fees, they'll work against loads of other agencies, and you know, I did it numerous times, because unless you're taught a different way or you're shown a different way, like, why would you think it any differently? Like.
Mm.
People don't have the bandwidth to like restructure their strategy when we're on the job. The job's really hard and really complicated at times, as much as people want to tell me on TikTok it isn't. Like, I get daily comments whenever I post about recruitment. I always get comments from people who obviously never done the job, and they're like, oh, recruitment's the easiest job in the world. You just put a job ad out and send a CV and you're all scumbags. And I'm just like,
wow,
absolutely no idea. Like, I always say, like, communicating to humans effectively, like, forget about sales, just communicating effectively to humans and establishing relationships, that's really complex in itself.
Psychology.
Imagine doing it as a job. Yeah, this is the thing. So people just don't understand what recruitment is, how it works. Yeah. And like you said, recruiters don't value their own time.
Yeah, no, I don't. We will definitely come back to TikTok during this conversation, don't worry. So I'm interested to know what your concept is of, or what your perception, I should say, is of those who maybe do go down the subscription model, which is obviously, you know, the misconception that that's kind of how lawyers work. You know, there are arguments for, if you're doing a lot of work with one particular client that you have got a great relationship, is it more beneficial to for them to pay you a monthly subscription fee? What are your thoughts on those? Because I guess that in a way, that's, you're still being paid for your time, aren't you?
So the main thing I always say to people, because one of the first questions I get is, how much do I charge? Because it's very much like finger in the air, isn't it?
Of course it is.
And I always say, first of all, well, it depends. It really depends on your current situation. Are you self-employed? What's your average fee look like? How long is it going to take you to fill the role?
Yeah.
Like for me, I used to charge $5,000 as a minimum for an average fee of, say, I don't know, 11, 12 grand. But because that made sense to me, because of our commission structure, like the way our commission structure was structured, we had I think it was a 2.5K threshold.
Right.
So I'd lose the first 2.5K anyway.
Yeah.
So if the retainer was 2.5K,
you wouldn't have,
and the client
anything.
Wasted my time. Yeah, the company gets paid 2.5K. I still get nothing. So, and some people struggle to process that. I used to have a few arguments with my old director, who was one of my mates, and he was like, I remember he won a 2.5K retainer, and I was trying to explain to him. I was like, yeah, but I still get nothing, even if the client wastes my time. So that needs to be like number one. Like, if they do waste your time, if they do pull the role, and you're only left with that retainer fee or that subscription fee or whatever, are you happy with that? Is that enough for you?
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not the whole fee, but is that good enough for you? So that's where you need to start, first of all. And then in terms of how you price it, like, I always did a flat fee. I don't believe in the old fashioned, in my opinion.
Third
model. Yeah. Cause I just don't get it. Like, it's so much admin for your client. And for me, it's just unnecessary steps. The subscription model I really like, you know, if it's done well, it just depends. Like, I feel like some people, there's always a temptation, especially the way the market's been the last year or so, to drop your pants a little bit and just charge a silly low subscription fee. And yeah, you win work, but you've got to think in terms of like the long term of the business. Again, it goes back to your goals, but so many people, like, I'm sure you've seen it, you get these recruitment agencies being set up and they charge 8%, 9%, 10%. And the conversations I have with them is like, well, do you want to scale the business at all? Or is it just something you're looking to do on the side? Yeah, I want to hire. Okay, cool. So if I'm interviewing for you, I'm going to ask you, like, what fees do you generate? What terms do you work at? 10%. Okay, cool. So my commission's always going to be rubbish then.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm like, literally, if anyone that doesn't watch and listens, I'm pulling the most extreme faces, because I have never pulled my pants down, even in COVID, even in recessions. I'm a huge believer that that's actually when you should be possibly charging more, because you are going to be engaging the harder to find talent. Because let's face it, in whatever market conditions we find ourselves in, having the right people to place with your clients is the key. That's the key to it. So why on earth would you start negotiating on your fee now? I just don't understand. I'm not suggesting for a minute that a subscription model or any way that you're paid upfront for projects should be less than what you would get if you're doing it as a contingency fee. Because I do occasionally, when I interview recruiters who do retain, they say, well, you know, we'll do 25% contingency and 20% retain. And I'm like, why? You should still be charging the same, if not more.
This is it's funny you mentioned that, actually, because I see that all the time. People always come to me and like, even if they've watched some of my free stuff, because I've got some like free masterclasses and stuff, and some people are able to like get going at least on the retainer stuff. And they'll be like, yeah, so, you know, we're winning it. We're charging, you know, 15% retainer, 20% contingent. I'm like, hang on a minute. You're charging less for the better service. Why? Because we want the upfront fee. And that is like borderline dropping your pants still.
It's just dropping your pants in a posh restaurant. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's a good way to put it.
It was just what... I just don't get that at all. And I genuinely think this is why it all comes down to scaling it all back again. It comes down to your mindset. I think if you, and I'm really, I want to just go back to another point and then sort of layer it back onto what we're talking about now, that retained recruitment is not just for those that do C-suite or those that do exec level. You can still sell retainers if you're placing engineers on $35,000 or you're placing, you know, teachers, for example. This is about you building a relationship with a customer where you know they have a problem, and it's critical to that business that you fill that problem. And this is them guaranteeing your time to help them solve that problem. You're not guaranteeing you're going to actually solve the problem, but you're guaranteeing that you're going to help them solve the problem. And it's just about the way that they value. I mean, I have had so many clients, and I'm being really contrarian now, and I said I would be. I've had a number of clients over the years beg to retain me to find the talent for them as a rec. And I've always said no, but I've agreed to work on an engagement model, which you're going to think I'm really splitting hairs here. So this is where they are paying me to do the research into what where the talent sits, where the talent pools are. So they're paying me for the, every hour that I do that project, but I'm not guaranteeing any interviews and I'm not guaranteeing any candidates. I guess you could say it's retained. We're splitting hairs, aren't we, over a title? They're paying me for my time, but I'm not guaranteeing that I'm going to find any candidates for them ever. Because my model is so candidate led. I get exclusive candidates and I go to market with them. I don't headhunt, I don't advertise. I get the elusive passive unicorns. And I know I'll place them because they're good. I'll only work with the best candidates. So my clients know that. And so therefore they want my what's up here. They want my intellectual property of what's going on in their market. And I'm saying, well, if you want that specific knowledge, you pay me for it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really, the way I do it, the way I preach, is just the way it worked for me. But it always comes back to, you just need to make sure you're fucking getting paid. Like, it drives me nuts. Like, I've seen people cry. I've seen people leave the industry over working, you know, all these roles and putting all this time and effort in for months. I know people who've like gone into an agency, worked 3 months nonstop, worked, say, let's say 13 roles. They filled one, 12 of them gone to a waste of time because they were pulled, filled by internals, filled by another agency, whatever. And they're like, bloody hell, all that effort, and I've made 600 quid. What is going on? And that's the main thing for me. I think your model's great, and I think anything that basically guarantees payment is great. And also as well, like, as you'll know, because you do this, but I think a lot of recruiters and a lot of directors of recruitment agencies don't really understand how much better their service would become. Like, even if you think about something basic. So what do candidates always moan about? They get emails about roles that are anonymous. I'm working with a fintech startup in London. Are you? Who are they? What do they do? Oh, I can't give you that information yet. Can you jump on the phone for me for half an hour and then I'll tell you? And they're like, well, just tell me. But they won't do it. Of course they won't do it, because the candidate will just, well, candidates are so sick and tired of recruiters at this point. Bad recruiters, I have to say, not good recruiters.
Yeah.
But they'll just be like, and I had a few people on TikTok saying the other day, like admitting, like saying almost guilty, but they were like, yeah, I have done this. They get the job description, they get the website, they just apply directly. And then they just go to the company and say, look, I've saved you a $7,000 recruitment fee. Just pay me an extra $7,000.
But the bit that's missing in the middle is the key word. It's the relationship with the consultant, because the consultant has skipped about a million steps in building that relationship and has just gone straight to, I've got a job for you. And I think that's where, when you are retained and you have that relationship with your clients, so your time is valued, you are more inclined to go and find the best candidates and say to that candidate, instead of, oh, I've got this client, it's like, well, actually, I have particularly targeted you, and I'm only going to be speaking to you about it. I am actually retained by the client, so they're not talking to anybody else. And so to me, the advantage is to everybody involved in the process. And dare I say, it's just a calmer, more enjoyable process for everybody.
It's such, honestly, that was one of, I'm glad you mentioned this actually, because that was one of the things for me. Like, I feel like, to be honest with you, if I look back, I think had I not, you know, moved over to a retain model, I think I would have left the industry and gone into someone like tech sales.
Mm-hmm.
And we lose a lot of recruiters, by the way, to tech sales, because tech sales is the cool thing now. They pay good basics.
Absolutely.
You know, anyone who does sales recruitment, I know sales recruiters who've done sales recruitment and then gone, hang on a minute, I might just go into sales and see the salaries.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
So it's, but yeah, for me, it was like, it was so much more enjoyable because I was so much more relaxed. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm definitely getting paid. Because I'm getting paid, I can now spend a lot more time on every step of the process. Every candidate gets my full love and care rather than me worrying, right, okay, great. I need to rush through this because I need to now call another candidate who might be called by another agency or the internal recruiter. So everything's rushed. The whole thing's rushed, isn't it?
Frenzy. It's like a frenzy. It's horrible. And it's no wonder that from every, you know, you're getting all these comments on TikTok that recruiters are crap, that recruiters themselves feel crap because they're like, this isn't the job I thought it was. This is just basically, I'm a glorified telesales person. It's horrific. So I think that everyone should just slow the fuck down and just think about how they can incorporate this into their business. And I think that's where somebody like yourself, that you're not sat there in your ivory tower. You are, you know, you had 6-7 years doing contingency and retained. You're using all the right, you know, the right mechanisms, the right processes. You're not cutting corners. You've got the, you know, the transferability to do that, but you're embracing other elements of it in terms of, you know, attracting candidate pools. Because I do want to talk to you about TikTok. So tell us about your TikTok journey. How did you end up on there? Were you doing it for like personal reasons, professional reasons? Were you just doing the doom scroll?
So why did I get onto TikTok? I started on TikTok, I want to say almost 2 years ago, actually. I'd heard about it quite a few times, and I heard about it. I used to listen to, do you ever watch Scrubs?
Yeah.
So the guys from Scrubs, Zach Braff and Donald Faison, you know, JD Turk, they set up a podcast during COVID. I used to listen to that loads. And I think it was Donald Faison Turk. He was talking about TikTok all the time. And I was aware of it, but, you know, like most people, I was like, oh, it's just a dancing app or whatever. My my niece was on it and stuff. So I was like, I didn't give it much thought, really. And I think I just decided to go on it because I heard someone talking about the engagement you can get as a business. And a lot of businesses, you know, who are early on it are getting amazing results from a marketing perspective. So I jumped on it, and I've always been into content creation. I've sort of dabbled in it. I had like, I built up like quite a decent platform on like Twitter for football. And I used to have like a podcast and a similar sort of style thing there. So I've been dabbling in it, but I never really like stuck to it. And I come across like the sales stuff, like Will Aitken, for example. He was at SalesFeed at the time. I came across some of his stuff and I was like, oh, these guys are like getting quite a good success. And I was still recruiting at the time. So I was like, do you know what? I'm really interested in sales. I love recruitment. There doesn't seem to be that many recruitment people on there. Mm-hmm. I'll just give it a go. And I just started posting videos and I got into it and I started to see that it was very similar to when Instagram first started blowing up 2013 or whatever it was, you know, when all the fitness influencers really started getting paid and stuff. And I was like, I miss the YouTube bubble. I miss the Instagram bubble. I will kick myself if I miss the TikTok bubble. And I actually have some knowledge to share this time. I'm not just making stuff up. So yeah, I started posting on that. I started getting some decent success. I actually started with a sales page. And then I was like, actually, I'll make a recruitment page. And then I had like, at one point I had like 4 different pages and I was all over the place and I was posting like 6 videos a day. And I was like, okay, focus on one, Dave, because my ADHD. Yeah. And then I actually ended up hiring a TikTok mentor. So I got really into it. And I was like,
wow, cool.
Yeah. So before the podcast, we were chatting, but a girl called Ariana Castell, she's like a Miami based TikTok coach. Not sure she's doing it now. I think she actually took a break recently, but she was fantastic. Like I came across her videos and I was watching her for quite a while. She was getting quite a lot of engagement and I sort of saw that she had like a course and a mentorship. So I was like, I just took the leap really. And I learned so much from her about like content creation and hooking people into content, which you can use as transferable skill for like podcasts and, you know, human LinkedIn, psychology or whatever. So yeah, I just plunged into it and she really helped me. And then, yeah, I think I just stay consistent with it because I was already doing LinkedIn, by the way. So I was getting decent success on LinkedIn. I'd just done Hoxo's Academy for my work, which was great. They invested in it, which was fantastic. And I was like, I know, I think most people want to post on LinkedIn, but they're just so shit scared and don't know what to post.
True.
So I did Hoxo, and with Hoxo, it was great. I did it with Joel Laugie.
He's still with us, he's still alive, but he's not with Hoxo.
Yeah, he's still with us.
Yes, like, I know he's moved on, hasn't he? Just a big shout out. Can we just pause to say a big shout out to Sean and to Amar as well? Because although we're not sponsored by Hoxo anymore, we were very proudly sponsored for about 2 years by Hoxo. We are still affiliates to Hoxo, and I did Hoxo myself, so I know how powerful it is to get your personal brand on track. So just thought I'd say that. But yeah, Joel's cool, wasn't he?
Yeah, Joel's great. Yeah, I love Sean as well. They're just a great business, really, and they know their stuff. So yeah, I learned loads through them, like the fundamentals of content creation, and I was like, if I can, you know, duplicate this on TikTok, it'd be great fun, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. So that's how I started, sort of how I got started on TikTok.
I'm gonna throw myself under the bus, and I said I would. I have dabbled in it. I'm a massive, huge content creator on LinkedIn. Anyone that knows me that's listening to this is here probably because of LinkedIn. Instagram, I kind of am on there just because I'm on there. Facebook, I don't know why I'm on there. It's just for the memories. And I feel like I'm this lurker on TikTok because I don't actually really know what I should be doing. And I wonder if that's how a lot of recruiters actually feel, because you go down, I think, right, I'm going to post this today. I'm like, I'll just go and see what everyone else is doing. And before you know it, you've lost an hour of your life. How does any business owner make that measurable? It's impossible. And I think it's very challenging to see the potential return on it. However, I can see that from just creating videos on there, it's a brilliant editing tool, even for older people like me, you know, technophobes like me. I have created some really cool videos on there. But I think I'm going to self-teach myself here. I know that for me, I'm not consistent at all. I'll post something 1 week and then I just won't do anything for weeks and weeks and weeks. I'm time poor. So what would your advice be to maybe not necessarily my demographic per se, but recruiters who know they should be using TikTok? Mm. What would your top tip be in terms of getting themselves? We know we need to be on there, but how do we make sure we're doing it to get some results from it?
I think one of the main things you need to start with, first of all, is like, who is your target audience and what are you trying to say? What's the end goal? What are you actually trying to do? Are you doing it for a laugh? Are you doing it to market your business? Mm. Who are you actually speaking to? And basically reverse engineer it from there.
Okay.
So, you know, for example, like if you, I feel like it's very similar to LinkedIn. Like on LinkedIn, you see people who are recruiters posting content for recruiters because that's what they know. Mm. But their target audience is not recruiters. Their target audience is accountants or something. And yeah. And for me, that's like, if you get in that first step wrong, then you're never going to grow, because you're just,
no.
your messaging is so all over the place. Mm. And you've got no strategy. So starting off, like, why are you doing it and who are you actually speaking to?
Okay.
And then just take some time and just try and figure out what would they actually like want to hear about, like how can you actually bring value to their lives, whether it's entertainment, whether it's knowledge. You've also got to think about, like, again, depends on what your end goal is. If your end goal is to win business, you need to have some sort of credibility in there as well. Mm. But having that focus, and even if it's just like writing it down on a Google Doc or a post-it note to remind you, because it's so easy to get lost down the TikTok algorithm and get sucked into trends and stuff. I've done it myself. Like, you know, you sort of go off on tangents and then you've been posting content for 2 weeks and you're like, what am I doing? Like, why am I here? Like, don't chase the engagement.
Right.
Like, that's one of the biggest ones for me, because I think people forget. I think people lose perspective on like what engagement is, what good engagement is, and what that looks like. And again, people fall into the trap of like, they see these people going viral. And, you know, I've had some viral videos. I've had some hit a few million and stuff. But that's all well and good if you're like, you're achieving your end goal, which is, let's say, winning business. Mm. But what's the point going viral if it's not even part of your target audience? It's fun. You get that dopamine hit. Yeah, it's great. And you might get recognized in the street occasionally. But beyond that, like, that's not why you're there, right? So
yeah,
you've got to remember that I always picture it like this, right? So if I say I posted a video and it got really low engagement, which for me is like 300 views, right? Mm. If you spoke to 300 people at an event, recruitment event, you'd be like, so many people turned up.
I know. I agree with you. I'm a huge believer about this with regards to engagement on LinkedIn, actually. I think it's similar lesson that you're saying. It's all about the return on investment, isn't it? So if I have a post that goes absolutely bonkers on LinkedIn in terms of the impressions, in terms of the engagement, in terms of the comments, in terms of people sharing it, but have I actually earned any money from it?
Yeah.
What's more important, actually? So I think there's a lot to be said there. I think the key takeaway I've taken from that, or key takeaways, I should say, is first of all, know who your audience is and understand what you want your page to be about. So, I mean, I think I'm really funny in real life, but I'm not sure I'm that funny on videos because I'm not sure people would really listen to me. And I don't think I've got the discipline to do. I have got discipline, but I don't think I've got the discipline to necessarily create what, like you have. You've created a whole theme with it. I think maybe I should just stick with the fact that I'm knowledgeable. I've been doing recruitment 25 years, and I imagine people probably do want to just drop in and pick a bit of my brain. Maybe that's something that I should stick to, but it's going to take time, right? It's like anything, it's going to take time to build that brand on TikTok. So if there's people listening now that maybe they're the expert in their market in renewable energy, or they're in charity, or they're in education, whatever it might be, it could be that could become your niche and your focus on TikTok.
What I would say as well, just as a third point, is I think authenticity is the number one thing that people look for now. And sometimes spending too much time editing is actually at your detriment, because I used to, when I first started, and this is why I got the mentor, because I didn't know where to start. I didn't know what good content looked like. I bought a stand, and I thought I had to be in front of a camera and be stood there in smart clothes and have it all be edited and whatever. And one of the first things my mentor said was, all her content was like on the go, like in the car and whatever. And she was like, you can only use, if you're time poor, which most people are, just record on the go. I bet you've got time on the way to the gym, or time 50, you know, 5 minutes in the car or whatever. So use the time you've got. But actually, a lot of people now want that sort of raw, authentic content. And the way it was described to me was, a lot of people want it as if they're FaceTiming you.
Ah, okay.
Because when you over edit stuff, people's immediate reaction is, this looks like an ad.
Right. It's too perfect. It's too filtered. That's not what they look like. And actually, this is where I counterintuitively think that the whole threat of AI taking over our lives means that we actually want to see you want to see the wrinkles, you want to see the lines, you want to see the real person. You don't actually want to see this filtered version. And the same goes for content. I think you're right. If I get, you know, like on a message, if I get a message and it looks like it's, you know, the person's all really corporate and everything, I don't click on it. But if it's like literally, like you say, somebody's face like that, I'm like, what's that? That's really good advice, actually.
I think the best thing to do is, like, you don't want to overthink it. And sometimes crappy content is the most viewed content, like, because it's like a real conversation. Like, people aren't editing it, so they cut out all their ums and ahs. It's just them in the kitchen and their phones like that, and, you know, they're just talking about stuff like a real person, just having a real conversation. There's no filters, there's no editing. And of course, you know, if you can edit and spend some time on stuff, of course that's good as well. But A/B test it, see what your audience wants, because not all audiences are the same, by the way. And
that's true.
And then just assess trends. Like, one thing Ariana was very good at was, what she would do is, she said that it all starts with research.
Right.
So there's like, your book for success on TikTok is on TikTok.
Yeah.
Go, whatever industry you're in, go look at the recruitment videos, the top performing recruitment videos in the last 6 months. Go look at them. Go see what they're talking about. Go see how they're recording it.
Yeah.
You know, and all these other little things. Make a couple of notes. It won't take you long. Take you 15 minutes. Suddenly you've got a 10 tips of, like, content that has actually worked. And then just do that.
That's
how you can start.
Really, really useful. Without a shadow of a doubt. And I think that sometimes you just have to fucking do it, don't you? Just do it. Just get on.
Just get stuck in.
And get stuck in. I really like that. That's a really useful thing. So what's in store for you in 2024? Have you got anything up your sleeve that we need to know about?
So I'm having a bigger push on content. So I'm trying to grow a YouTube channel at the moment. I was a bit lazy with YouTube because I was focusing more on TikTok and LinkedIn. But I've just launched like an online business development training platform.
Fantastic.
So that is, yeah. So I've put like, basically what I realized was, because I did have one, and the training platform I had it on was actually shut down. So they've moved over to like a ChatGPT thing. So I had to go find one. And as I was doing it, I realized that there was a lot of platforms out there with loads of new features, loads of cool features I wasn't aware of. Mm. And what I realized was, like, going back to retainers and that sort of stuff, I think it requires a more holistic approach, because teaching people how to get paid a fee up front is not enough. You need to make sure that the entire scope of it and every single step that a lot of people consider basics and then they assume they're doing it right. Yep. A lot of them aren't. Like the job briefing call.
Yeah.
A lot of people's job briefing calls are terrible. They're not getting near enough information. And then they find out at final stage that was rubbish. And so what I've done is basically I've got all my retainer stuff on this platform, but I'm sort of filling in the gaps elsewhere and everything that I feel like you need to be a modern recruiter in 2023 and onwards. So, you know, recruiters, it's not just about cold calling anymore. It's not just about speccing, building a personal brand, for example, utilizing AI, using lead magnets, all this kind of stuff that you need to do that, to be honest with you, tech sales has been doing for the last few years. Mm. Recruitment's always like 5 years behind all the other sales industries, in my opinion, because we're just, I don't know why it is. So that's basically where my focus is. I'm building that out and I want that to become, you know, one of the best training platforms and most comprehensive
ecosystem, isn't it? Well, that's what I like about it. You're saying that this isn't just retained on its entirety. This is, if you're going right back to the process, it's every element of it. And I think that summarizes recruitment for me. We are not just one thing. We're not a one-trick pony. It's about having a complex psychological understanding of what we do to impact a business and what we can do at each stage of that to ensure that we are getting that true partnership. But I think, you know, it still starts with that individual sat listening now. And I'd like to think that those that choose to take their time to listen to podcasts are those that have got growth mindsets, that do want to improve, want to be the best, want to be high performing, all the things that you would expect. So we'll make sure that we share the link, because by the time this goes live, it'll hopefully be all up and running, and it'd be good to see how we can support you, Davey, because it's been really lovely getting to know you today. Because I'm that lurker on TikTok. I do actually pretty much, I think I like all your videos. I think you're just really good fun, and I think you are very authentic, and you are exactly as I expected you to be, actually. You
know, that's good to hear.
You're just as friendly and just as chatty, and it has been a real joy. So obviously people will presumably be clicking and lurking on your LinkedIn, but hopefully we'll actually want to connect and hopefully get involved with some of the training that you actually do as well. So thank you so much for joining us today. We can't wait about getting some of the guests on your podcast that we talked about off camera as well. Getting some famous people on there, hopefully.
Yeah. No, thanks so much for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. And yeah, really enjoyed the chat.
Yeah, it's been really good to have you. Thanks for joining us on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast.
The Recruiters Recruitment Podcast is thrilled to be partnering with Inclusion Crowd. Inclusion Crowd put the D into diversity, but do it disruptively. We love that. Really reflecting what we're about. I was introduced to Inclusion Crowd back in 2020, and I've been absolutely blown away with what they're doing to totally transform the recruitment and hiring sector. They believe at Inclusion Crowd that companies should be reflective of society, and that no matter who you are listening now, you have a story to tell, you have a contribution to make. An Inclusion Crowd educates you in allowing your voice to come out and share that story, but doing it in a way that educates your colleagues and your customers equally. Inclusion Crowd, like the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast, has clients all over the world, and they specialize in our industry. What we all want to do together is to maintain best practice and to raise industry standards to enable us to attract and retain the best talent but doing so inclusively and with true diversity. By doing this, by accomplishing a true EDI policy within your business, you will also retain the top talent as well as attract new talent, which is a win-win for everybody listening, making more profitable business and a much better industry, highly regarded. Inclusion Crowd are also the official awarding body for the Inclusion and Diversity Certification Mark within recruitment. We are so proud to be assisting and partnering Inclusion Crowd. If you want to know more information, please click on the link in this episode and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when you do so. Now, back to the episode. We are so proud to be partners of Needy, the gifting revolution. Here at Key Recruitment, we absolutely love to send out bespoke gifts to our new place candidates to welcome them in their new jobs, but also as an extra special thank you to clients or when a team is celebrating something really special. But to be honest, we were really fed up with dull or mediocre gifts that you could just buy on the high street that didn't really reflect who we are at Key Recruitment as a business. This is why we chose Needy. Needy source sustainably from the UK's best independent businesses, offering the most perfect array of bespoke gifts and experiences too. So no more boring bottles of plonk or rubbish boxes of chocolates. This is how you make your customers' day with a gift that really matters and shows that you really want to do something special for them. For more information on how psychology and AI forming to make the best gift experience for you, click on the link and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when ordering. Now, back to the episode.